KTWH LP 99.5 FM, Two Harbors, Minnesota. Here we are at What's Happening on KTWH, and Dan Walker is with me here in the studio. Thank you, Dan, for being with us once again.
Thank you very much. Always fun to be here. A little bittersweet this is my last time
here. It is a little bittersweet. I feel like you were here not long ago at all talking about everything that's going to happen this summer, and now here you're moving out west and, in fact, have already had your last day at work, so you're just coming in here out of the goodness of your heart, so thanks for being here.
You bet. No problem. I love coming in.
Yeah. So, let's see, Dan, how long have you been here?
Carrie and I moved November 11th, 2014, so
really?
About 6.5 years.
Six and a half years. Time flies. Well, Dan, I really believe you have carried Two Harbors into a new place. You're integrity and transparency in the city office is something that has been really appreciated by this citizen anyway. Do you want to just share with us what you might feel like are things that you're proud of, your accomplishments, or not of you necessarily, but even of the city during this time, and where you think we've come in your tenure?
Sure. I think, reflecting backwards, I think, the one thing that I'm probably the most proud of my work and also the work of our staff and the city council is the implementation of the capital improvement plan and really getting a grasp on some of the infrastructure needs of the community. I think that was identified as a real major issue when I arrived, and with the age and condition of the infrastructure that we had within the community, it was getting to a point that it was becoming very critical that if we didn't create a really long-term sustainable plan that we'd lose control of it. So
yeah.
I was very proud. It took quite a work of the staff to put the plan together, working with our engineers and also our staff, and then selling it to the city council and getting them to believe in it, and then getting the word out to the community. It was quite a lot of work, and it wasn't the easiest process to go through, but obviously you're seeing the fruits of the labor by the projects that we're getting done and the things that are happening in the community. So I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, it's a huge one. It's not one that is gets a lot of attention or, not one that is flashy. It's just sort of the basic work of cities. And I also feel really grateful that someone was willing to look that hard straight in the eye. And we're sort of mid into it right now, right? We got several years behind us and several years ahead.
Yep. We're a couple years into the plan, and it's a five-year revolving plan. So the staff and council review it every year, and then it's kind of an ongoing plan for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
So hopefully the council, I think they're getting comfortable with it, and hopefully they can continue on and continue to make the needed infrastructure improvements.
Yep. And so how has it been just relationship-wise? I mean, building all these relationships over the last 6 years in Two Harbors, and I know you're also an active citizen member and member of the Rotary. What are your thoughts on what's Two Harbors like for newcomers?
Yeah, I think it was funny because we were talking about this the other day, and one of the first people I met in Two Harbors, made a note that I would never be from Two Harbors. Carrie and I would never be from Two Harbors. And, I've never felt that way. I've always felt like the people in this community have been very welcoming, very open, and very friendly. So it's been easy for us to make those connections. And I think just personally, it's super important as my position to make community connections. And it was one of the things that I stated in my interview is that, small towns are very limited in resources, and so you got to be able to capitalize on, those relationships and those abilities to use the strengths and use some of the resources available from other organizations and make use those to make successful and strong projects. So
yeah.
That's always been super important for me. So
yep. You know, and I'm a newcomer too, supposedly, and I also had the same experience of you as people say, how long did it take you to really feel part of the community? And I said, I think it was actually the first weekend when I was invited to a back to school party by the people whose house we had bought, actually. So, you know, we also have found it a really wonderful place to move to. I'm so glad you seem to say that was a good thing for you, your family as well. What would you say are the strengths of our city government, and what are our challenges moving forward?
Yeah, I think, you know, the strength, I think it's also, you know, I think the strength is that they are very willing to allow people, you know, if people want to step forward and get engaged. I think they've been very supportive in the last few years of, you know, community members who are taking the lead on some projects.
Yeah.
You know, we've got the Bandshell project going. We've got some things with the Edna G. You know, some of I know that there's the downtown music event that they've started. And those are things that if people, you know, bring ideas and bring concepts to the city and they want to take the leadership, I think the city council is very supportive of projects like that, where they want to see cool things happening in the community and they want people to be engaged that way.
Yep.
You know, on the converse of what are the challenges, I think, you know, losing the local newspaper, I think was a big challenge, and
yeah,
you know, not being able to share some of the things that are happening. So I've been very appreciative of the opportunity to come into the radio and visit with you and make sure that the honest and true information is getting out there. So
communication
yep.
is definitely a challenge,
yep.
and in particularly now, definitely the radio has played a vital role in that. And you know, if I read a little bit between the lines, Dan, I also hear, maybe this is because I've seen this myself, is there's a wonderful active citizenry here, and there are still lots of ways in which, you know, you have a lot of meetings where there are not people coming to the meetings to understand what's going on and, you know, getting people to show up before it's time to start complaining about something is probably... And maybe that's just the way of it, you know. It just seems to be something that's hard to escape. But that surely is an ongoing challenge for us.
Yep. Yeah, that's obviously a difficult thing. And I have always been a big supporter of, you know, if you've got a question, getting the right information from the right people, either coming to City Hall or being engaged at a meeting or getting involved on a committee or a commission or just being active in the community, I think is very good to learn about how municipal government works and what the goals and things that we're trying to achieve as a city. So,
Yep. Yeah. Now tell us what you're most excited about moving forward here. I know that the mountains are calling you.
Yeah. You know, I think just, Montana's kind of always been on my radar as a place that I'd like to go. I love the beauty and the wildness of the mountains, whether it's, you know, the western part of the United States or Alaska. I think those are places that I've always been just drawn to. And so when the opportunity came forward, you know, we took it. Obviously a little bittersweet, but we're looking forward to new landscape and new adventure and a new playground out west. It's going to
yeah.
be a really good time for us.
Yes, it is quite a playground out there in West Yellowstone. And well, needless to say, you and Carrie will both be missed. You've brought a lot of richness and just really good relationships to the community. So just want to say on behalf of Two Harbors, a big thank you to you, Dan, and also to Carrie. I feel like it's kind of inseparable to thank you separately. But
yep, thank you.
Okay. Well, any parting words for us?
Well, I just want to say, you know, this has been just such a great opportunity for us the last, you know, 6.5 years. You know, Two Harbors will be always a place in our heart. You know, what a great community. People have been really open here, and I think Two Harbors has a really great, bright future. So I just want to say thank you to the community, and thank you to you, Katya, for letting me have this opportunity every so often just to visit with you. So thank
yeah.
you very much.
Well, I'm so glad you were able to come on one more time. All right. Well, till next time, Dan, have a wonderful summer and good luck with your future.
All right. Be good, Two Harbors.
All right. That was Dan Walker, former city administrator for the city of Two Harbors. A little bit of a poignant interview for Dan and I. We've been here many times. All right, back to a little music. Stay tuned. Kenny Blumenfeld will be on in just a moment to give us some weather tidbits. All right, you're listening to What's Happening on KTWH, and with me on the phone is Kenny Blumenfeld from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Thank you, Kenny, for being on the line with us here at KTWH.
Yeah, it's good to talk with you. Welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah, it is great to talk to you. It has been a while, and I feel like it's been quite a summer, and I know that there are a lot of people with pressing questions about what's going on and what that means. So let's just start with the basics. So it's been hot and dry, and we've had a lot of haze here in the Northland. I know that even sailing way up on Isle Royale, we had sort of stifling heat, which I know I've never had on Isle Royale before, as well as sort of gray skies and a blood red sun. So what can you tell us about the basic trends for the summer?
Yeah, so I guess there's a lot of different pieces, and we can kind of break it down. You definitely got to the heart of it, which is it has been dry, and it has been warm to occasionally hot here in Minnesota, including in areas that are influenced by the lake. I think the other thing is that we're not the only part of the country by a long shot that's had these conditions, and there's a connection here. So something I don't think I had a chance to discuss while you were away is there was an extraordinary heat wave that affected the Pacific Northwest, parts of Oregon, Washington, California, even British Columbia. This was at the end of June. This is not news to anybody if you pay attention to things.
Right.
Most people are aware of this. But this extraordinary heat wave was basically from an acute intensification of pretty much the same pattern that had given us the dry conditions for the last 2 months and has also been producing much worse drought conditions out in, you know, California, parts of Nevada. It's just this big sprawling, you may have heard of it referred to as a heat dome.
Yeah.
That's actually a reasonable description, because warm air tends to be very thick relative to cold air, which tends to be very dense. It's just the physical rules that they have to obey. And so when you get a big, hot air mass, the center of it tends to be kind of tall relative to the cooler edges. And so, you know, although it wouldn't be a dome in the way that we think of it, the proportions would mm-hmm. be off a little bit, it does take on kind of a dome shape. And within that area, the pressure is rather high, and so you can't really generate much precipitation. And this is a big, sprawling area of high pressure that's covered the western United States for the last 2 months and occasionally reaches into our region, and that's when we start to kind of heat up a bit. So we actually have, I mean, you know, the weather systems change a little bit when they cross the Rockies. They kind of reorganize themselves, but we actually have a connection to that western drought and even that northwestern heat wave, because it's really the same pattern that's keeping us dry that's been keeping them dry, and it's the same pattern keeping all of us dry that also kind of briefly super intensified and turned into that catastrophic heat event where, you know, like, what was it?
Yeah.
The transit cables were melting and streets were popping open, and the town in British Columbia set the Canadian all-time high temperature record and then promptly bursted into flames and was pretty much burned to the ground. So it's been, you know, it's been a kind of surreal, difficult summer, and that blood red sun that you mentioned really is because of all the smoke. And it's not necessarily, you know, it's hard for us to get smoke from Oregon. Usually when smoke drifts in here, it's either from the foothills of the Rockies or from the Canadian prairie provinces. And this smoke that we've been getting recently has been drifting in from Ontario straight north, or from Manitoba to the north and northwest. And it's been, you know, I guess the saving grace of it is it's filtered the sun enough to keep the temperatures, in some cases, maybe 10 degrees cooler than they would have been otherwise. So thanks for that. But it's also made, you know, it's made the air smell. It's put this kind of grayish pall over everything. It's made the sun appear to be a piece of fruit floating in the sky. And it's just kind of really changed the whole ambiance of summer. So
it has.
Hot, dry, smoky summer.
Yeah,
and it sounds like the smoky is, I mean, it lets up, but then it keeps coming back and it keeps coming back. And I'm assuming these fires just keep burning, and we don't really know when that piece is going to end.
Yeah, I mean, so having some fire in dry areas every summer is not that unusual. And this is the dry season in the northwest and western and southwestern U.S. So it's not that unusual to have fire during the summer in those areas. But our fire season, and this is something I'm sure a lot of the listeners know, our fire season here in Minnesota, if we're going to have forest fires, if we're going to have wildfires, for sure, the vast majority of the really big ones are either in the spring or in the fall, because these are the times when you don't have much moisture in the vegetation, because there's none of that evapotranspiration. The vegetation often goes dormant, and so things really dry out. So those are our main fire seasons. What's been unusual is it's been dry enough here that the fire conditions, it's not that there's been huge blazes all the time, but there have been some up in the boundary waters, and there have been some, for sure.
Yeah.
But the conditions have been so prominent because it's been so dry. So we're also a little concerned that as we get into fall and you get into the real fire season, that if we don't get some serious moisture in here, we could have a very active burn season in the fall. And I don't think anyone's looking forward to that. I know the fire weather people who work at the DNR and the U.S. Forest Service, they're pretty well exhausted already. And so we'd like to see a break.
Yeah, and now this sort of heat dome that we're around the edge of, it seems like drought begets drought. And it's just, so, I mean, once again, we're in this pattern that you've talked about before, where it seems like we get predictions of rain, but the closer we get to it, the more it just sort of dries out. And nothing seems able to sort of maintain its moisture long enough to fall. So where is all the moisture? Is it over in Europe or something?
Well, I mean, you know, the simple thing is to say what you said. Drought does beget drought. What's really happened is, it, to use a different metaphor, is that drought kind of ties rain's hands behind its back and makes it sort of an unfair contest. And here's how. So first you get a reduction in precipitation, and maybe this happens sort of randomly. Maybe it's because the weather pattern shifts and it's just harder to get, you know, precipitating weather systems. But now you've got less precipitation, and if once it happens long enough, there's less moisture in the soil, there's less moisture in the vegetation, and there's also less water in the rivers and in the streams and in the lakes. And so in a typical condition where you've got warm and humid air flowing up from the Gulf of Mexico, you're also boosting that moisture with, you know, what the soil, the plants, and the surface waters are giving back to the atmosphere also. But when we don't have very much, I mean, there's no moisture in the topsoil throughout Minnesota now. So there's very little, if any, moisture leaving the soil for the atmosphere at this time. It's already been sucked away.
Yeah.
And there's not much in the vegetation. I mean, obviously, you know, twigs on trees, branches on trees are still green. There's still some moisture in them, but there's not much left to give. And they've really, you know, those roots have been busy pulling water out of the ground just to kind of keep the trees healthy, and that they're doing all they can. There's not much left to give to the atmosphere. And then the rivers and the lakes are all down, and some of the smaller ponds and wetlands have been drying up. And so there's just less. So the less it rains, the less moisture there is, the less humidity is in the air. And that means there's less fuel for the next round of rain when it comes through. And so it's sort of like it ties the rain's hands behind its back a little bit and really tilts things in the favor of more drought until an overwhelming quantity of moisture begins arriving into the region.
Right.
So that's kind of, and you know, the truth is, you know, we don't like to make really long-term predictions because it's hard, but I think an honest look at all the forecasts, whether you analyze the models yourself or you take the official forecasts out of the Weather Service and out of the Climate Prediction Center, there isn't anything on the horizon for 2 weeks suggesting a major change. There are chances for precipitation. I actually think parts of northeastern Minnesota, maybe even you, have a good shot at some nice, crisp, booming thunderstorms. I say crisp, that like nice crackling sound.
Right, right.
Might even get that, and maybe even some downpours tonight. And you know, in the evening and overnight period. And it's going to be hit or miss, but I could see some areas getting over an inch. I think most places will get far less than that. And as you get down here into the Twin Cities, there may not be anything. But, you know, there will be these chances for showers and thunderstorms because we're on the edge of that air mass. We're not in the middle of it. So the transition always kind of is where you see stuff happening. So there could be some thunderstorms. There could even be some big thunderstorms. But none of this looks like it kind of adds up to a pattern change.
Right.
It looks like hit or miss showers and thunderstorms that are going to really benefit some people. And you know, you can already see, if you drive across Minnesota, you can see the areas where the farm fields have clearly gotten more water. And you can see the areas where they clearly haven't. And the same is true with other types of vegetation. You can see it in some of the trees where there's just a deeper green because they got one of the big June rainstorms versus the areas that have more browns and yellows, even in the leaves, because there just wasn't any moisture.
Right.
And so I think that kind of difference will be repeated. You know, we'll just sort of play that out again tonight. And then for the coming 1 to 2 weeks, but it looks like we're flirting with more hot weather. I would imagine the hot weather will be filtered or dampened a little bit by some of this smoke and haze, because those fires out west and up to the north aren't really going anywhere.
Yeah.
And maybe that'll keep the temperatures down, but it's kind of the same pattern. Give us 2 weeks before we can even begin to talk about any big changes. And at least by that time, we'll be starting our slide into autumn, so the heat should start backing away, and maybe if we're lucky, we can get into a pattern where, you know, we get some moisture return, maybe some tropical moisture gets injected into the region, and maybe the jet stream moves overhead for a few weeks and just soaks us. But right now, there's nothing like that in sight.
Okay. Kenny, I want to move to asking you a little bit about just right by Lake Superior. It seems like I know a listener has asked the question, why is it so much warmer near the lake this summer? And and just to add to that, you know, generally when you get an east wind here, the temperatures can be downright icy almost even in the summer, but this year they've been cooler, but not definitely not significantly cooler when we have an east wind. And as people who test the temperature when we're out there sailing, I will tell you that we've never had such warm temperatures deep down. We've had warm temperatures, you know, 70 or above at 5 feet or less. But this year, even in June and July, we're seeing, I know there was one time it took getting down 50 feet before we saw a temperature of 50 degrees. So I'm wondering if that is related to the seemingly less lake effect that we're having this summer.
Well, I think you're definitely onto something there. I mean, my first response is to acknowledge that I'm not really a lake physical, you know.
Right.
I'm not a physical limnologist. I'm not a lakes expert. I'm not a large lakes expert. But I get a basic mechanism. So there's a few things at play here. One, Lake Superior had a short ice season. That's
right.
Important. And it didn't have much. I mean, there was that run in February where we started adding ice pretty quickly, but it really came off ahead of schedule. So it had a short ice season. It's had a long open water season, including some very sunny conditions without smoke filtering the sun in April and May. And I think that sunlight was able to, you know, dive into the lake and really get things heated. And, you know, it's a longer exposure of sunlight than we normally have.
Right.
We probably added 1 to 3 weeks onto that sort of effective sunlight heating the water season. I mean, it's a huge lake, so there has to be more going on than just extra sunlight. And the other thing is the weather pattern itself just has not been conducive to those large lake breezes. I mean, for one, we've had a lot of winds coming out of the west, and so that will keep, even as a differential forms between the hot land and the cooler lake, if you've got a wind coming out of the west, it's these sort of dry winds that are running down the slope, and they will tend to compress the air and make the harbor areas feel hotter. There have been some really hot days in two harbors, and there was even a day in Grand Marais, which is almost never hot. What's the temperature doing up in the 80s?
Right.
There? And it's these sort of downslope winds coming out of the west that are also going to kind of prevent that cooler air, that dense air from over the lake, from spreading inland. And it sort of acts like a hand that kind of shoves, you know, just kind of shoves the cold water or the cold air over the water and keeps it there. So I think it's those two mechanisms kind of working together to produce, you know, you've got a warmer lake and then you've got conditions that are just less conducive to the cold parts of the lake sharing itself with the surrounding region.
All right. Well, that has precipitated for me more questions that I want to ask, but we'll have to save it for next time. Thank you so much, Kenny,
sure,
for coming on, and we'll hopefully talk to you next week.
Yeah, we'll talk to you next time, and welcome back. Enjoy.
Yeah, you bet. You take care. That was Kenny Blumenfeld, senior climatologist at the DNR.